Why not take Pep Talk with Meg with you?
A vacation? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait to go. Okay, where are we going to go first?
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
Okay.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go.
And it's absolutely free.
That'll work.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3 no matter where in the world you are. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Much of the rules in terms of the times and the ages are the what already comes from the state's statute that needs to be codified for us to be able to enforce. And that is, if you're under the age of 18, you can be out until 11 p.m. on weeknights and midnight on weekends. It will be citywide and it will be year-round. All penalties are going to be civil, not criminal. And there are penalties for parents and guardians that are built into the ordinance.
Yeah, the ordinance that is proposed for the curfew is available. It's going to be talked about next week, City Council, as we talked about yesterday with the mayor. But the details are actually fairly interesting if you read through the ordinance. You know, for example, it states, you know, quite plainly, the purpose of this is for public safety. It's called the Juvenile Curfew Ordinance. The purpose of the Juvenile Curfew Ordinance is to protect minors from harm and victimization in the city of Pensacola, to promote the safety and well-being of minors in the city of Pensacola, to reduce the crime and violence committed by minors in the city of Pensacola, and to adopt a local juvenile curfew ordinance. And then it goes on and gives, you know, some definitions. And at first, when you're reading it, you might wonder, like, why are they defining an emergency and then establishment and then minor and legal holiday and all this stuff? And then it becomes clear later on because the exceptions and exemptions depend on those definitions. So, for example, a minor may not be or remain in a public place or establishment between the hours of 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. of the following day, Sunday through Thursday. So think weeknights. It's written a little bit awkwardly because of the midnight thing, but from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., Sunday night into Monday, and then, you know, Thursday, okay? A minor may not remain in a public place or establishment between the hours of 12:01 a.m. and 6 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. When I first read it, I'm like, what about Friday? Well, Friday night becomes Saturday, so it's Saturday at 12:01. So weekdays, 11 to 5. Weekends, 12 to 6. That's your prohibition. A minor who's been suspended or expelled from school may not be or remain in a public place, in an establishment, or within 1,000 feet of a school during the hours of 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. during any school day. I thought that was an interesting add-on, that there's a no school zone curfew as of for people who are suspended or expelled, which I just caught me by surprise. I didn't know it was going to be in there. Exceptions. Does not apply to married. If you're married, the curfew doesn't apply to you, or emancipated by a court or competent jurisdiction, which I'm sure that's on legal advice, and I'm sure that's because the premise is that if you're married at 17, that, you know, you're capable of living a full life, or if you're emancipated, I mean, you're living as an adult, right? And so you don't, it doesn't justify to have you under a curfew at that point. Accompanied by minor, accompanied by parent or another adult person at least 21 years of age, given permission by minor's parent or legal guardian to have the care, custody, or control of the minor. So if you've got a note from mom and you're with somebody 21 or older, then you're good. Involved in or attempting to remedy, alleviate, or respond to an emergency. Makes sense. Attending or traveling directly to or from an activity involving the exercise of rights protected under the First Amendment. So if you're going to church at 1 a.m., you're fine. you might think, but, you know, they're trying to write the ordinance so that legal challenges don't get it invalidated. And, you know, going to church, theoretically going to a protest, I suppose if we have a rave protest at 2 a.m., that would be the way to work around this ordinance. I don't think that's likely to hold up. But, you know, I'm trying to think like a criminal. You know, how would you work around this? Attending or directly traveling to... Oh, sorry, I said that one already. Going directly to or returning from lawful employment. Obviously going to or from a job. Returning from specific school-sponsored functions, religious functions, or civic functions. So, and accompanied by adult 21 years of age or other, or up, and with a note from parents. On the property of sidewalk of the place where the minor resides, so you can be on your sidewalk at 2 a.m., it's fine, or of the next-door neighbor. Interstate travel or bona fide, interstate or intrastate travel with consent of the minor's parent. So again, with the parent's note, there's a lot of with the parent's note exceptions here. Attending an organized event held or sponsored a theme park. Okay. So if you go to Wawa, I guess, you're good. These exceptions apply both to juvenile offense provisions and parental liability. Minor claiming an exemption shall or exception shall identify the specific exception and give the evidence. So it's kind of just, I don't know, it was interesting to read some of that. And the mayor mentioned this a little bit in his overview yesterday.
There's specific exemptions for minors who are married and emancipated, accompanied by a parent or authorized adult, responding to emergencies, traveling to or from First Amendment protected activities, work, school functions. So there's lots of detail within that, because that's one of the big questions we get is, well, what if I work at a restaurant and I'm coming home from work? Obviously, there are common sense protections within this ordinance of somebody that may need to be out during that time. That is not what this ordinance is trying to address.
Okay, so then it goes on to the legal duty of the parents. Parents of a minor has a legal duty and responsibility to ensure the minor does not violate this juvenile curfew ordinance. Parents of a minor has a legal duty and responsibility to personally supervise or arrange for a responsible adult to supervise the minor so that the minor does not violate this juvenile curfew ordinance. So, you know, parents are supposed to watch their kids even up to the age of 17, and if they're not, they have to have somebody else watch them. Or at the house is fine, but if they're leaving the house, then why didn't you watch them better? It shall be a violation of the juvenile curfew ordinance for the parent, legal guardian, or other adult person at least 21 years of age having the care, custody, or control of a minor to permit or by insufficient control to permit, that's an interesting turn of phrase, you know, to allow or, you know, to fail to control them and therefore allow such minor to linger, stay, congregate, move about, wander, or stroll on or upon the public, I love the synonyms, the public streets, highways, roads, alleys, parks, public buildings, places of amusement and entertainment, vacant lots, or any public places in the city of Pensacola during curfew hours, unless the minor is accompanied by his or her parent, legal guardian, or other adult person at least 21 years of age having his or her care, custody, or control. My one thought, I'm not a lawyer, you know that, I'm a philosopher. And I know there's a principle in the law that if you make a list, the premise is that, like, including these things, that you meant to not say other things. And so it makes me wonder, I haven't thought about whether there might be other places besides alleys, parks, public buildings, et cetera. But it seems to indicate by listing these are the prohibited places that if there are other non-listed that, I mean, it goes on to say or any public place. But anyway, it caught me a little bit sideways. Then exceptions, okay? If you make a missing person notification. Because think about it. If you're an adult and you've got a kid and the kid's a runaway, well, you're responsible for them and you can be charged under this ordinance if they get into trouble, unless you tell the police that they are, in fact, a runaway. In which case, it's like, you know, if the car's doing bad things, it's your fault. Well, I reported the car stolen. Well, it's not your fault anymore. Like, that's kind of the idea as I understand it. And then you have procedures. You take if you find a minor out roaming in the wild without supervision, taken into custody, transported immediately to a police station, and then you contact the parents. There's a time limit involved in all of this. Eventually take them to their house if you have to. Penalties. First violation, a warning. Second violation, anybody who's had a first violation as a minor gets a $100 ticket. Civil, it's not a criminal thing. Third and subsequent, $250. And then if they are also engaged in other crimes, you can also charge them with any other activity that's a crime. For parents, first violation, a warning. Second violation. And, you know, just read this around. I'm just thinking, okay, so if you have multiple kids, I think the parent side escalates for each kid. It's not like, okay, you could read this in two ways. You know, Johnny's out at 1 a.m., the parent gets a warning. Johnny's out at 3 a.m., again, you get a ticket. It's $250. Third one is $500. And then Johnny, okay, but what if it's Johnny, your kid is out at 1 a.m., and then Mary's out at 1 a.m.? Does it start over? I mean, for the kid, it does, right? It's each kid. But if you're a parent, I would seem to read this as if you've got two kids, you know, it's easier to escalate. I don't know, just a question I'd have for the mayor. I haven't had a chance to ask him about that. Again, this is, I like it. I generally support it. I like the fact that it gives the police something that they can do. It gives an incentive to parents. It makes it cost parents something for their badly behaved kids. I do have some concern that the kids can be out causing their parents to lose money this way, but the kids are losing money too, you know, so.
And parental responsibility is going to be part of this ordinance as well. This is not we're not looking for a way to criminalize teenagers who are out after dark, but it's an effort to support public safety, of course, and ensure that teens who are out after dark have a responsible adult who knows where they are.
Right. That's the basic idea.
Because this happened in light of July 4th, that I think it's misunderstood that the reason we're going to this curfew is specifically because of the shooting incident, the senseless act. That is not the case.
You remember at the time, you may not, and that's okay. That's why I'm here to remind you. At the time, I made the observation that there were really two different, not particularly connected things going on the night of July 4th, morning of July 5th. There was obviously the shooting, right, and the people that that involved. But that was not so much connected to the earlier big, not teen takeover, that's not quite right, but there were a lot of teenagers downtown, and they were getting into fights, and the police were making some arrests, and they were throwing fireworks at each other. Remember all of this? And I said at the time, if we pass a curfew, we're going to think a curfew is going to prevent shootings. And the curfew is not really so much about shootings, because the people involved in the shooting, all but one, were all adults. It wouldn't affect them anyway. But we have a problem with these kind of teen get-togethers. You know, we saw Cordova Mall, right, which was would not be a curfew subject either, right, because it's not late enough at night. But we've had some of these incidents with teenagers and, you know, the concern about what to do about that. And what he's saying is, and I said at the time, your thinking is we put a curfew, we don't have any shootings. Well, we might not have any shootings because we don't have that many anyway. That's not really proof that you did anything effective. But I don't think the curfew is really going to address the shooting issue. It's they're kind of two separate things. And that's what the mayor was getting at yesterday is these really are two different things, even though the most high-profile news incident, 4th to 5th July, was the shooting. Really, even if the shooting hadn't taken place, there was some pretty bad stuff going on downtown as far as behavior-wise and, you know, public disorderliness, that we need to get a grip on this, and that's the real issue with the curfew. The two are not necessarily connected. So even if we pass a curfew, if there is a shooting, it doesn't mean that we, you know, failed. If we didn't pass a curfew and there wasn't a shooting, that wouldn't mean there wasn't needed to be one.
What happened previous to that act, which is having our officers identify 12 and 13-year-olds that are out on 4th of July unattended after 11 o'clock, after midnight. So I see why people are trying to combine these two, because the thing that's very notable was, of course, this senseless shooting.
Right.
But there were other more minor yet disturbing ideas that we have, middle school age kids out on their own and causing issues for our officers and to be able to protect our.
Yeah, and though by definition it's a minor incident, it's not necessarily a minor incident, the two different meanings, right? Minor juvenile versus minor significance.
So this is not in reaction. If someone says, well, wait, you know, many of the people that were involved that have been named in the shooting incident are above 17. Well, that's wise, because then you're congealing two different things. And so I like to decouple the idea of the shooting and this being a knee-jerk reaction to the shooting.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly right. So 522 on News Radio 92.3. Any thoughts about this ordinance? You like it, you don't like it? This will be next Monday at the agenda conference for Pensacola, and then the regular meeting on Thursday. Of course, they'll actually vote on it. That's the first of two hearings. So this is not going to actually go into effect for a while. There was some question about that at the press conference. You know, how quickly will it be implemented? You know, I would guess that probably PPD is going to do like they normally do and have a kind of a soft information zone, a 30-day. But then again, the first infraction is a warning anyway. So maybe they won't have a 30-day grace period. We'll see. I'll actually talk to PPD later on this morning and see if they have a perspective on that. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need that next vehicle, or maybe. Because I know a lot of times what happens is, you don't have to have a newer car, but you are getting to the point where you're justifying not doing something, and you're kind of putting up with your old car. Well, you shouldn't have to put up with the car. You deserve better than that. But every day you spend time in your car, and if it's annoying and irritating, and you are kind of delaying it because you don't like the process of finding a replacement, which I very much understand, go to Frontier Motors. First of all, go there and find out that a place can be a car dealer that can be different. But also go there just to get a sense of what's out there because you may not know. You know, and what you might discover is, well, you know, replacement car is going to be more than I thought it was. So I'm out for a while. I'm just going to put up with it. I mean, I don't know. You might find that out. Or you might be like, oh, that's all? Okay. But the point is you can get good information. It can be kind of fun to look at cars. It doesn't have to really kind of be painful. And maybe you wind up buying one. I don't know. Frontier Motors has been serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
There is a big difference in the type of service you get from companies that do air duct cleaning. Hi, this is Todd from Gulf Coast Air Care, and I want you to know the difference between a quality job and a blow-and-go duct cleaning job. Let me ask you this. Do you really think you can get a one-carat diamond for 10 bucks? It's just like getting a $99 whole house duct cleaning. There are guidelines from the National Air Duct Cleaners Association and also the Better Business Bureau. A true inspection, cleaning, and restoration of an AC system includes the equipment and ductwork by a licensed and certified company. It's like a full detail for your car instead of the cheapy method of running it through a $5 wash and go. Air conditioners are expensive. Keeping them clean and well maintained is a guaranteed way to have better health and comfort. So you decide what works for you, the $5 wash and go or a full detail top to bottom. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com or call 934-2768.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
There are a lot of questions about roof replacement in the news lately, such as insurance companies demanding replacement before they cancel coverage to companies not doing the job that they sold to you. Make sure you tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9:30 as Quality Roofing Solutions will answer your questions. Find out what makes Quality Roofing Solutions the premier contractor in Florida today at 9:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer at a beverage manufacturing plant, he starts his day knowing every line is ready to run. Because Grainger delivers the industrial-grade products he needs to keep mixers, conveyors, and packaging equipment moving. With Grainger's vast selection of bearings, belts, and motors, he keeps operations running smoothly, so nothing grinds to a halt. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keeping you connected to Pensacola
and the world.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
We are doing the right thing, aren't we, Hi? I mean, they had more than they could handle.
Well, now, honey, we've been over this and over this, and there's what's right and there's what's right, and never the twain shall meet.
So I don't know if you have been paying a lot of attention to these wildfires. I'll just be honest. I lived out west for a long time. We lived in Phoenix for almost 7 years. Lived in Oregon for 2 years. And, you know, I remember one time when we were in Oregon and we were actually the people who owned the house that we were renting, they up and decided while we were on vacation that they were going to take back possession of the house, tell us we had to find a new place to live and give it to their daughter that they had said that wasn't going to be an issue. So they broke a promise. Anyway, so we basically had to scramble and find another place to live, which involved us living in a hotel for like, I don't know, a week maybe. And it was wildfires at the time. And so I remember the smoke in the air in southern Oregon. You know, like being out and basically at the pool at the hotel and, you know, the smoke was covering this. So you could be, it was okay to be outside, but it wasn't great. You know, so, I mean, this is like, that's life in the West Coast. You just have fires. So there is a part of me that always thinks, well, oh yeah, there's fires, you know, like, cause there's always fires. I mean, it's just, it's a thing. In fact, if you look, there's a really interesting website, frontlinewildfire.com. And they have a map of the whole U.S., and so they'll tell you all the places where there's, you know, fires and or hotspots. And, in fact, there's fires in Florida. There's a 1 acre fire in Jacksonville vicinity. There's another fire that's over in that vicinity right now as well. It's, you know, they're not particularly large. Then there's hot spots. That satellite detects excessive heat, so it's like potential. And there's actually a couple of those, not exactly in our area, but sort of not that far away either. There's actually one hot spot right now located in, I mean, right around the Pensacola area. So, you know, you get kind of used to this being the case. And if you look in Texas, there's a 6 acre fire here, and there's an 8 acre fire there, and there's a 1 acre fire, and there's a, this is outside of Dallas, there's a 9 acre fire. You think, okay, I mean, there, you know, there's always fires, which is true. Well, then if you go to the West Coast, and same thing, you know, there's 8, 10, 15, 30, 1, 2 acre fires all over the map. Like, the map is covered in fires. And then if you click on the Big Grass Fire and you see that, it's 280,000 acres. Like, and it's, you know, 35% contained. You're like, wait, what now? I mean, that's, you know, calculated acres at 346. Holy smokes. And then there's another one that's like that, too, right? Right nearby, the I clicked on the wrong part of the map. The Coleman Creek Fire, 278,000 acres. So yeah, these are nuts. I mean, there's all kinds of fires all the time, but these two, at least, are about 600,000 acres combined, and those are in southeastern Oregon, and that's not even counting some of the ones that are up in Washington State. So yeah, there are some very huge fires right now.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Ron says a deal with Oman to reopen the Strait of Hormuz is on the verge of being finalized. Both nations agree ways to navigate through the critical waterway. President Trump in Las Vegas.
I'd rather make a deal because I don't want to kill people. I do not want to kill people.
The potential for criminal charges against Dr. Anthony Fauci. A Senate committee expected this morning Chairman Rand Paul's resolution to hold Fauci in contempt of Congress.
Usually the full Senate must approve a resolution holding Fauci in contempt of Congress before sending it to the Justice Department for prosecution. But Paul believes he has a workaround, handing the measure directly to the DOJ, along with a legal brief supporting his argument.
That's Fox's Madeline Rivera. Health workers in Congo working in the Ebola outbreak protesting today, demanding to be paid for their work. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. We'll get a look at our forecast here in just a couple of minutes. A 38-year-old Pensacola man has been arrested in last week's murder at the Quality Inn on Pensacola Boulevard. Mario Wiggins is facing a murder charge. Deputies say surveillance video showed him leaving the hotel hallway with the victim's gold chain wrapped around his hand. Sheriff Chip Simmons told Channel 3 that investigators later found Wiggins wearing that necklace when they spoke with him. The victim was found dead with a gunshot wound to the head last Thursday. Wiggins is being held without bond. Well, colleges nationwide are rethinking how they teach as artificial intelligence is becoming a part of daily classroom life. At the University of West Florida, an AI task force is studying how the technology can be used to help students learn, not just how to catch them cheating.
In education, we don't need to be afraid of AI, but we do need to be really thoughtful about AI. And students need that opportunity to demonstrate what they can do independently without the AI tool, but then they also need the instruction and direction about how to use those AI tools appropriately, because those tools are being used in the workforce as well.
And that is Lauren Adloff speaking with Channel 3. She says UWF staff are already using AI themselves for lesson planning and data analysis as well. The historic tall ship Elissa will dock at the Palafox Pier later this morning. Port Captain Ryan Bradfield says the scale of this vessel is something that, well, you really have to see in person to appreciate.
So Elissa is a bark, so she's got three masts.
Okay.
She has square sails on the fore and main mast, and we have 19 sails total, almost a quarter of an acre of canvas.
And free tours will be available Friday morning from 9 until noon, then again Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. A paid sailing experience will also run on Friday afternoon from 2 until 6 p.m. For information on that or tickets, check out their website at galveston250.com. A local war hero returns home today.
After 75 years, the remains of Private First Class Joseph Chancery are finally coming home. Channel 3's reporting Chancery was a 20-year-old Army private from Atmore who was killed in action during the Korean War. His remains will arrive in Pensacola today, 10:30 this morning. Officials say Patriot Guard riders and state troopers will take part in the escort to Mobile, Alabama. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
Now, Rick Scott thinks Dr. Anthony Fauci could go to prison. Senator Scott talked to Fox News yesterday. He said Fauci lied when he testified recently to a Senate committee. Scott said Fauci lied about the origins of COVID and gain of function. He also said he believes he will be held in contempt and could serve time. It is 5:35 here at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our forecast from Channel 3.
We are going to have a small 20% chance of rain today. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For Friday, mostly sunny skies with a 20% chance of rain, high near 89. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 78. Heading into Saturday, a very similar pattern with a 20% chance of rain, high near 90 degrees, and Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 78 degrees. We've got cloudy skies. Our next, partly cloudy skies, that is, our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Nicole Murray with your money now. Nippon Steel, the Japanese giant that acquired U.S. Steel for nearly $15 billion last June, says the Pittsburgh-based company is among its main sources of profit. Nippon's report listed its net profits in the quarter ending June 30th as $477 million, with about $123 million of net profit from U.S. Steel. Just one day after launching an artificial intelligence tool that allowed users to create fictional aerial images, Google Earth rolled back the feature, citing concerns about misinformation. According to the New York Times, the feature was called Nano Banana 2. SoftBank has reported profit for its fiscal first quarter that beat market expectations, driven by a huge gain on its stake in Intel, while a rise in ByteDance's value helped its Vision Fund division. The Japanese giant said net profit for the June quarter totaled $2.2 billion. Futures are mixed after the Dow's third record close in a row. That's your money now.
Did you know? Economic development is not about slogans. It is about outcomes. Florida West Economic Development Alliance works to recruit and support businesses that generate high-wage jobs, significant capital investment, and long-term tax base growth. That means stronger public services and a more competitive Escambia County without raising taxes. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
The countdown is on.
Chest high stab. Here is the give. Tall Feely bounces to the outside. 25-20, 15-10, 5-4-3-2-1. Touchdown, Florida State. Touchdown, FSU.
Hi, this is Jeff Colhane, voice of the Florida State Seminoles. The new college football season begins for the Noles in just a few weeks. Join us all season long on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves. I want to remind you that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir. Good to have you.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Good morning.
So we have a lot of things going on in the city. The one that I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about a little bit is Another fire at the scrapyard? Are you kidding?
Yeah, I think I had the same reaction. while we're in the conversations of trying to kind of rectify things and make sure that, I mean, when you just see how far our hose has to go to get to a hydrant to put out this fire, I mean, if you see the video of it, it's insane. And so, this is just that classic case of kind of being in that industry where you do what you want to do and you don't really have to care much about your neighbors. Well, when you start having 6 fires in 2 years, then we're going to force you to care about your neighbors is really where we're at. So in fairness, after fire number 5, the company, the organization has been very receptive to our concerns. I will say that. I haven't even had that direct conversation with them other than letters that I've sent to England and everywhere else to share our displeasure. So I know there had been some conversations with our fire department, on-site inspections, things like that. So obviously disappointing to see. This was much more minor in nature from the previous one. And that could be, we'll see, could be perhaps because of some of the kind of quick strike adjustments that were made that will help mitigate some of these issues. So more to come on that. But the frustration that you share in your question is the same one we share in the building right now, because this has just gotten to a ridiculous level that if you aren't going to be a good neighbor, we're going to make you be a good neighbor.
Right. I was stunned by it. One of the things that's on the agenda for next week is I think the curfew, or at least the broad, is this the final ordinance we've got? I have not had a chance to read it, so if it is, I apologize. And what elements are relating to the parents and parental responsibility is the particular thing that I'm curious about.
Exactly. So, yeah, it is on, obviously, like any ordinance in the city, is 2 readings. So this would be the first reading. Second would be in September. But ultimately, it follows the same state statute that cities are required to codify to enforce, which is 11 p.m. For the 17 and under, 11 p.m. on weeknights, midnight on weekends. And before you say, wait a second, my son or daughter work at a restaurant or something like that. Obviously, there are several, like, I don't have time to go through them all on the radio, but there are several exceptions like that. Commuting, you know, coming to and from, being at a friend's house. You know, it's not like they're going to come if you're in a friend's front yard on private property. I mean, that, there's definitely different scenarios like that. And so I would read through those. But ultimately, 11 on the weekdays, midnight on the weekends. And first is a warning, second is a fine, third is a bigger fine and potential additional action. So, and for the parents, there are fines up to $500, depending on how many warnings have taken place.
Really?
So same thing, you can kind of look through kind of strike 1, strike 2, strike 3. But the bottom line is, if we have a serial problem with your child being out after midnight, causing issues on public property, then this is not a child problem solely. This is a parental problem as well. And that's what really needs to be addressed, is like the old 80s, you know, what is it? It's 10 o'clock or it's midnight. Where is your child right now?
You know where your children are,
like, yeah. I mean, that like the old PSA. So I don't think this is an unreasonable ask. And I would say, generally speaking, we've had a lot of warm reception to this, you know, around the city when this has been discussed.
Is it citywide or is it zoned by downtown only or something?
It's
citywide. Okay. Was that on legal advice?
The press conference had asked me that. And I know that was our intent, because you start picking and choosing streets and districts and all those, you know, or if Andrew's on one side of the street, is he not in the curfew? And then the other side he is. You know, I think it's just easier that's a legal decision ultimately, but purely from a legal standpoint, obviously there's going to be certain areas where you're going to see this more likely to happen or for violations to happen. Nonetheless, it would be citywide.
All right, very good. The LDC, I was just browsing the agenda while we were talking. The LDC final implementation, I think that's on the council for next week.
Yeah, finally, the snowball is big enough for us to take something on. This is a multiple year process of auditing our land development code. And if you guys haven't heard, we have not overhauled our land development code holistically since 1949. So when you and you say, well, you know, hey, that sounds like a boring topic. What does that have to do with me? if you talk about housing affordability, then you should be talking about the land development code, because this is what allows us to be able to thicken neighborhoods, to be able to modernize our rules that maybe make a garage apartment a little easier to build. Maybe all of those little things where we can increase inventory and units. So from a mayor's desk, there are very few paint brushes that can paint with one stroke to be able to attack affordability. And that's why we did this right when I got in office. And again, 3 years later, almost, we're going to finally be adopting some of those changes.
For people who are probably not going to sit down and read through the entire proposed revised land development code, and it is important for people to understand that the things that annoy you in your daily life when you live in the city, like your neighbor's fence, your neighbor's tree, how far or near you are to the sidewalk. I mean, like, all of that stuff is land development code stuff. You're annoyed that the coffee shop is too loud. Like, that's all LDC stuff. And so it matters, and it's all, every rule is a result of a case. So what are some of the big changes?
Yeah, I will reinforce that point by saying, I think public works, like all the stuff, street sweeping and cleaning out storm ponds and all that, that combined with LDC or the zoning, are those types of things that you don't notice as a resident have such an impact on you. It's just something you don't think about.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Our land development code is what, how big your front yard needs to be, how close your house can be to the next house. All of those different things are set and codified in a land development code that set those rules. And that's why building a house in the city is going to have a different set of rules than building a house in Escambia County or Santa Rosa County or Milton or anywhere else. And so I would say probably the biggest change is, and this is a recurring theme, I think, in this administration, which is clarity. We had different sections of our code that said one thing, but then when we amended something in 1986, we added something else that actually conflicted with the other page.
Okay.
I mean, it's the Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid. And the reason we haven't done a holistic change of your land development code since 1949 is because it's hard to do. It takes 3 years. You got to audit. You got to have all these public meetings. I mean, it takes some political will to say, hey, we can do better. We had several different overlay districts with different sets of rules in our downtown. Actually, even had some areas that were in two. So what rules am I following? Am I following that overlay or am I following this overlay? So there was lots. I would say eliminating confusion for our contractors, our builders, our citizens who want to build or renovate their homes in our city. I think this is the clearest the rules will have ever been, ever, in the history of the city. So I think that is important and encourages more growth and more development and making people more confident to build their houses.
It also means that if you're ever going to tweak it, if you're ever going to change it, you know where to change it, you know what needs to be changed, and you can actually make the change accomplish the outcome you're aiming at, right?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously there are several changes we can talk about. You know, another big one that makes headlines sometimes, the initially strengthened tree ordinance that will go from $400 to $1,500 and many other things will be in here.
Okay.
Councilman Moore and I are going a step further to protect Southern Live Oaks specifically, that are going to have a significant application fee, a significant higher fine fees and things like that, we are not going to infringe upon private property rights. If your property allows you to build 3,000 square feet, you can build 3,000 square feet. However, we're going to make you think about maybe putting a driveway on the other side or something like that, because it's going to be costly if they're going to take down a 150-year-old oak tree. I mean, that's just the fact. So anyway, it addresses trees. It addresses thickening neighborhoods, what you can or can't do with duplexes on certain lots. So it gets real technical, for the radio, but I could just tell you there's going to be a lot less confusion, a lot more clarity about what our rules are, and some opportunity to make it easier on our citizens to do what they want to do.
I want to ask a super nerd question that I know you'll appreciate, and I just don't know the answer to this. It has always struck me that the linear measurement for trees was not a great way to do things, because, for example, if you're replacing a 36-inch tree with 12 3-inch trees, that's not the same, because it's a radius squared math problem to replace. It seems like it ought to be that same kind of a relationship. Which way does the new LDC go on replacement trees?
Yeah, actually, this was something that I put in that I agree with you. That if you had a 36-inch tree, our current rule right now is you have to do 12, only 3-inch trees is what you're allowed. So you have to do 12 3-inch trees. Well, that's not going to create canopy on your sidewalk out front. You're going to go stuff them in your backyard. I mean, that doesn't even really make any sense. So what we did is I got with our arborist and we said, well, why wouldn't we allow citizens to put as large a tree to count against that 36 inch as reasonable? So we actually went from 3 to 6 inches. So now, same scenario, someone could do 12 threes or they could do 6 sixes. We aren't letting them go larger than 6 because of its ability to plant. You know, we don't want somebody to drag a dead old tree that's 24 inches wide and say, wait, I replanted it. Yeah, I'm good. So on the expertise of our arborist, we said, you can't really go larger than 6 with a new planting. But I can tell you, if you do a 6-inch tree, to your point, Andrew, the canopy is created 5 years sooner than a 3-inch tree.
Well,
more than 5 years sooner.
No, I love that portion of it. I meant that it should be more than just 6 of them, because when you get into the squared relationship, the surface area of the cross section that you're replacing, which is of course very much related to the overall canopy size, it's not enough to say, you know, just 6 of them. I haven't done the math in my head, but you'd probably need to be, you know, 12 or
you're
20 of them.
You're saying, hey, is inch for inch enough? And that's a fair argument. Obviously that's a pretty standard thing. That's what they do in Tallahassee and many other cities around Florida. And then you pay a fine if you don't make up those inches. $500 a caliper inch is what it'll be now. So so totally get that, but we got to balance, you know, what would the right number be. And
and obviously trees will grow, that squared relationship is going to change over time as the trees get bigger. I get that too. I was just curious. I didn't know the answer, so I was curious about that. There's an informational meeting about Baptist tomorrow night, I think.
Yeah, that's right. We actually been having them every month. Every other month is at Lakeview Center, at the gymnasium right there by Lakeview, just north of the Baptist, the Legacy campus. And then the corresponding month, the next month, they're actually doing on-site. If you want to go, we won't let you go in there and get a sledgehammer or anything, but you can get pretty close and you can walk around with our Jacobs Engineering folks and our city folks. So it gives you a real opportunity if you want to, you know, take the ground and see what's going on. So we've been doing that now for several months. So yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have people out that are interested or have any concerns about what's going on.
311 app. Somebody said it's not working anymore. It was, I know nothing about this except what somebody told me.
Okay. So we did go to Penny
going to the AI on the call in, right?
That's right. So if you go to citypensacola.com right now, on your phone, on your laptop, whatever you want to do. If you go to citypensacola.com right now, you can basically, the 311 app is on the front page right now.
Okay, so instead of on your phone, it's on the web page, basically.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that with finality. I obviously need to learn more about, you know, what app they're talking about and download the right one. I don't know if I can solve the entire thing other than to say anybody out there that's got an issue with the city of pothole, garbage, anything else, you can go right to the front page of the website, and that we've got that prompt right there that can help you file a ticket and get it done quickly.
Very good. We always like to end with lightning round questions. First one for you, is there any movie that growing up, whether it scared you or otherwise inspired you, that affected your behavior? Any movie that you drew a behavior change from?
Oh, my God. This is supposed to be like questions I can answer in 3 seconds. I've waxed philosophical on my, I answer Dumb and Dumber every time, and I just feel like it always fits. It always applies.
That's how you outfitted your van, was in exterior carpeting. Okay, fair enough. I got you.
Yeah, it's why I wear orange tuxedos.
There you go. During recess, what was your game of choice? Or activity of choice?
All sorts of sports, but basketball. I played basketball through high school. Definitely basketball.
Okay, and continuing a theme, did your family play card games or any kind of game growing up? If so, what was the card game of default choice?
Yeah, so my grandfather and I, he's awarded 2 Purple Hearts in World War II. Always, he would pick me up when my mom was at work after school, and we played gin rummy all the time. And he was relentless. He would not let me, you know, there was no helping me win. There was no, so my record was like 2 and 900 probably. But I learned how to play well, at least.
How much of your birthday card money did Grandpa win back?
Well, he would give me $2 bills every March 25th.
Gotcha, yeah.
So he didn't take any money off me. He wasn't that tough. He didn't want me to learn that kind of lesson.
Oh, you had it easy.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. I get to keep all my cash. Yeah.
DC Reeves, Mayor of Pensacola, looking forward to the meeting next week, city council meeting next week. Thanks, as always, for the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Of course. 553 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have a business, you have to deal with benefits for employees, HR management, payroll, all of that stuff, you know, dental, vision, life, disability, health insurance, your favorite thing in the whole wide world. You want it to be cheaper. You want it to be better. It's neither. Okay. That's why you call Torgerson Consulting, because they do this stuff for local companies for 25 years. Since 2001, they've been helping local businesses like yours evaluate their plans, make them better, make them cheaper, both if possible. I know we worked with them here for about 5 years at Cat Country and News Radio, and they came in and basically I didn't know what it could have been because in our prior, you know, it wasn't as good. And then they came in and like, oh, choices? Better? Cheaper? Woohoo. I mean, you know, it might not be. I can't promise you, but have them come in and take a no obligation look at what you're doing, and they'll tell you what they can do for you, or if they can't do anything for you. You know, Todd's a very detail-oriented person. Reed. It was Todd and Reed's father and son. But, you know, Reed Torgerson, very capable. I've seen him, I mean, I've talked with Reed many times, but also I've seen him give a good presentation to Milton City Council in detail about what they were doing, what they were thinking about doing, and actually how what they were thinking about doing might be cheaper this year, but would be very likely to cost them more later. And, I mean, that was a great, it was a very savvy analysis, and that's the point. He's very detail-oriented, and they'll help your business do better. 433-9996. Give him a call for a no-obligation review of what you're doing, or check him out online, Torgerson Causey at tcbenefitsgroup.com.
For almost two decades, Bella Magazine has been celebrating the women of the greater Pensacola community. The tradition continues as Bella Magazine brings print to radio every month on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Tune in today at 9 to hear latest health and wellness, philanthropy, stories on local businesses and women, fashion and beauty, home and garden, wine, travel stories, and more. That's the Bella Magazine Show, today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Hi, this is DC Reeves. Together, we are moving Pensacola in the right direction. My priorities are building a healthy economy with good careers and keeping our community safe. I will always support our small businesses and back the blue. Let's keep working as a team to move Pensacola forward. I'm DC Reeves, and I'd be honored to have your vote on August 18th.
DC Reeves is endorsed by Sheriff Chip Simmons and the Fraternal Order of Police. Paid for by DC Reeves for Mayor.
Hey, Eldon here with Sonny's. What happens when you combine the cool waters of a southern creek and the smell of slow-smoked barbecue? You get a feast and float party. This is your invitation to join us this Saturday from 10 to 3 on the Blackwater River. Bring your family and friends. Don't forget your floats and your appetite. We'll have Sonny's slow-smoked barbecue while supplies last, giveaways, and music. Everything you need for an unforgettable summer day. Come make memories. Maybe get a little barbecue sauce on your shirt. Visit floatwithsunnies.com for all the details. And we'll see you at the Feast and Float.
Summer season is here, and Florida summers can really be hot. But despite the warm temperatures, your garden can still produce some beautiful flowers and delicious vegetables. Get all of your garden tips from me, Mike Wiggins, on The Garden Line, heard on the Pensacola Expert Panel every Tuesday from 9 till 10, and Encore Hour Saturday from 9 till 10 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Garden Line is presented by Blue Sky Landscaping and Pensacola Hardware.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
I believe that diplomacy should be the cornerstone of any foreign policy.
And I can see Russia from my house.
Song needs
more cowbell.
More cowbell. That's right. Well done, BJ. 557 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, this is kind of an interesting note. I guess my ignorance on the subject is going to prove the point of the subject. You'll understand in a moment. We're finally going to get a Gulf War monument in Washington, D.C. to represent Desert Storm and Desert Shield. It's going to start, they're going to break ground on this in October. They're going to, it's not clear to me how quickly it's going to be installed, but October is going to be the commencement of this. It's going to be, it's going to be dedicated October 24th. So it's in process right now. 35 years after the Gulf War, man, you know, in 1990, 1991, right? 700,000 Americans served in the 1991 Gulf War, which is crazy. I wouldn't have thought it was that many. I don't know. And the article I was reading about this yesterday from military.com made the point that, you know, everybody knows Vietnam and everybody knows the war on terror. And to some degree, a lot of people kind of conceptually just forget about Iraq and Kuwait and think that either it's sort of not much of anything, you know, like it was over in a day, it was 100 hours long. No, it was longer. I mean, it was, you know, significant, two phases. Or they kind of lump it in with the war on terror. Like in your brain, you just kind of, it's like, it was like the first war on terror. No, it's, I mean, completely different. I mean, a sovereign country invaded another sovereign country and we went to their rescue. Relatively few Americans died, 300. That's still 300 more than zero. That's significant. But again, it kind of gets lost in the gap, so to speak, historically between Vietnam and September 11th and the war on terror for the next 20 years after that, and still to this day. The project was about $40 million to build, and funding, $25 million of it came from Kuwait. The city, or the country we protected, that we liberated from the invading forces of Iraq. Veterans of Foreign War contributed about $500,000. Other money is, none of it came from government. I mean, our government, right? It's all volunteer donations. So I think this is a wonderful thing to have.
Stream us at NewsRadio923.com. News Radio.